You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome to episode 26 of the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, July 2nd, 2008. I'm Martin Spriggs.
And I'm Sally Draper.
And we want to thank you for listening in on our weekly conversation about all things technology, but perhaps more importantly, how technology can be used for ministry. Sally, we've reached show 26, a half year of Wells Tech Podcast shows.
Right. Who would have thought, huh?
We did it. We made it halfway to a year. So hopefully we're starting to get the hang of this thing.
Yeah. I remember when we started, Martin, and we didn't quite know what we were doing, but feeling like we're in the groove a little bit and really excited for all the listener feedback that we're getting. That's what really makes the show valuable, I think, for us and for all our listeners, is that we can address topics that have meaning to people that, you know, they're looking for answers and how technology can help them with their ministry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's really the important part of this whole thing. It's not just you and I chatting each week, because we could do that, you know, without the recording devices and sending this out via podcast. But, you know, the fact that we do have people listening, and that's a growing number, and that they're participating is kind of neat to see. So kind of makes the Synod a little bit smaller, and the community of those interested in technology is a growing one. So that's great. Speaking of milestones, I noticed I try and keep up on the world of technology and what's going on in it. I noticed that Bill Gates, the founder of Microsoft, retired last week. And there are literally thousands of articles waxing philosophic about his contribution to computing technology. Sally, it's hard to argue that without Gates and Microsoft, things might be a lot different today in the world of technology, huh?
Very true. You know, this is an amazing time we live in, and certainly Bill's vision for Windows and all of the products that support and are around that have changed all our lives.
Mm-hmm. For those that aren't as geeky as maybe Sally and I, he's really the inventor or the author of the programming language BASIC, which kind of spawned the whole desktop PC revolution. And his vision was, not to mention, you know, that Microsoft would rule the software world, but you know, that a computer would be on every desk. You know, and as much as we have kind of this love-hate relationship with our computers, compare what we have today to life maybe 25 years ago for, you know, pastors, teachers, office workers. You know, we had things like, you know, the typewriter and slide rules and the ledger for the financial folks. And boy, back then it required scores more workers and a lot more time to do some of the same tasks that we do today with computers.
Absolutely. It's amazing just to see how technology affects our little congregation here at St. John's and Sleepy Eye, and the things we've done just in this past year with technology to improve our communication and record keeping and things. It's just very, very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember your first computer?
I sure do. I got it for high school graduation in 1983. It was a TI-99/4A, and I had a cassette recorder attached to save my data
on
cassettes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. It was very exciting.
So you had a computer before I did, actually.
Woohoo!
My first computer was in, I believe it was 86. It was my vicar year in St. James, Minnesota. It was an 8088, an IBM 8088, had that amber character-based monitor. My brother convinced me that I needed one, because then at that point I was just using the regular typewriter to type up sermons and Bible classes and those kinds of things. And I remember being on the phone with him constantly the whole week after I got that thing, and he walked me through how to turn it on and what it was and what this floppy disk was for, and installing WordPerfect and never look back. You think back, and it wasn't that long ago. Yeah, it's only 20 years ago that those came on the scene, 20, 25 years ago. But, boy, they've changed. They've changed life for a lot of people.
Absolutely, and I'm loving it.
And we wouldn't have this show, probably, right?
There you go.
We're not for those. Today we're going to talk about what some would call probably an older technology at this point, and that's email. It's kind of become a rather ho-hum communications mechanism, but I think still very, very essential to churches and schools.
Sure. We're looking at ways here at St. John's to reduce paper and go more paperless and also have more immediate communication with both our school families and our congregation members. And so email is a fast and free way to do that.
The cost-effective part of it is, I think, really appealing to congregations, a lot of them, and schools. A lot of them that I'm talking to are trying to get off of this weekly or monthly newsletter routine, which is very labor-intensive, not just in the collecting of articles, because that's not going to go away, but in the formatting, publishing, printing, and ultimately mailing of these, sometimes larger, 8 to 16 page documents. And I think people are seeing the way to cut those costs dramatically is through the use of regular digital communications.
Yeah, that's our number one priority here, to address the newsletter needs. But we also see, if we have this in place, this communication mechanism where we can easily keep contact with our members, we can send out, more immediate alerts and things, for instance, with the school if there's a snow day or some type of crisis that we need to have an alert sent out about. We could do that, very easily we'd have that mechanism in place.
Mm-hmm. So how does a congregation get started in doing this? I suppose the first step is you've got to have all the email addresses of your congregation members in some kind of database or some kind of way that you can use them over and over again.
Right. We're looking at polling our congregation members, actually probably starting with our school population at school registration this fall, and first just asking permission if we can use their email address in this way. Mm-hmm. So, just beginning to communicate with them seems like a simple thing, but, it's good to let them know that we're going to begin to do this and make sure that they want to receive our communication this way. There may be people that don't.
Or don't have email, I suppose, right?
That's true, and so we'll always have the paper for that reason. Mm-hmm. But in setting it up, you want to make sure that they can opt out of it in the future, too.
So, right. So you need to keep track of that. So you can't just say, do you want to not have it, and then forget that or not record the fact that they don't want it, because that would obviously be annoying to them, where they said, hey, I want a paper copy, but you're still sending me this digital and not the paper.
Right. So we're planning to use our Shepherd Staff database. We use Shepherd Staff as our church management software. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be recording the email addresses in there and maintaining kind of a yes-no field of whether they want to receive email communication.
Yep. One of the first tips that maybe I would recommend if you're using email to send out communication to your congregation, and you see this abused all the time, is use the blind carbon copy feature that's built into your email client. It's so important not to protect the email addresses of your congregation members. And very often you'll see large emails you can see every email that particular message was sent to. And it's so easy to just click that blind carbon copy function. I know that's easy to do in Shepherd Staff, and it's easy to do in almost any email client, so that the people that are receiving it don't know who else is on the list. Now, obviously, they're going to know that this is a bulk email. But it's still just good form to hide all those email addresses, and blind carbon copy is the way to go there.
Definitely. Also, you want to allow for possibly putting in place a privacy policy, even mm-hmm. considering, when you're dealing with a large number of email addresses, that you put in writing that we're going to do our best to protect your email address and that kind of thing, so that your members know that you've given it consideration and that you're doing your best to maintain privacy and things like that. We did a show early on in our podcasting career, where we talked about
way
email
back,
retention.
Right?
Yeah.
Episode 8, I think it was.
That's right. And after that show, we were kind of looking at retention policies of email around, primarily around school usage of official communication and things like that. But after that show, we heard from Pastor Hans Cowie at St. Peter in Modesto, California, and he shared with us a sample privacy policy that they were using there at St. Peter. Mm-hmm. So I think I'll throw up a link to that privacy policy just to give people an idea of what they might include in such a policy.
Right. I guess what we're saying as we're thinking about some of these considerations is you need to think through this. It's not just as simple as firing off an email. There's different considerations about privacy, about allowing them to subscribe or unsubscribe, making sure that you're recognizing that this could be a big deal and requires some support. Latch onto a tool that's going to allow you to maybe import addresses from a database like Shepherd Staff, or making sure that you can track the subscriptions or those that want to unsubscribe. You need to determine who's going to maintain all of this. If it's not going to be self-service, for instance, if you don't have a tool that's going to allow members to update their email addresses, you have to assign that task to a person or people and then figure out how to get the most current information, because email addresses can change pretty regularly.
That's right. So, you know, sounds like a great idea, simple and stuff, but you do need to put some brain power behind it and do some planning and figure out what systems you need to put in place, both technology systems as well as, manual people type systems to maintain and support email news.
Yep. So let's talk a little bit about the how, Sally. How, you know, once you decide to do this, and it's a great idea to do it, as more and more of our members and certainly school families have email, how do you go about putting the technologies in place to do this?
You know, Martin, I often bounce ideas off my husband. He's the pastor here at St. John's, so he's dealing with these things on a regular basis. So I posed the question to him, you know, what do we do for email communication? And he said, well, I use my Outlook and I send email to whoever I want to send email to. So mm-hmm. Obviously that's the starting front end site. Solution for this is that you can just use your regular email client, maybe maintain a group in your email address book so that you can easily just click, I want to send to the school, families, or whatever, and it would include all of the email addresses that are pertinent there in your email program, and you could send email off through your regular email program.
Right. Two things get, I think, a little dicey when you begin to look at larger numbers, however. First of all, the maintenance of those email lists is a real challenge, because it's harder to slice and dice who you want to send these to. It's kind of an all or nothing. You maintain, you know, 10 or 20 different lists, one for choir members and one for all members and one for school families. And, you know, you may have some duplicates in there, so it's very inefficient and very time consuming. Another challenge I think that you're going to have when you're starting to send out to hundreds of people is you may have some limits. Your software may limit you, or the internet provider, your internet service provider, may limit the number of respondents. Or finally, on the back end, the recipient's internet service provider may block you if it feels that you're sending to maybe more than they think you should be sending to, and tag you as a spammer.
Right. They're getting wise to the different techniques that spammers use to send out their mass emails. And so if you're using similar techniques, blind carbon copying, a whole lot of people, mm-hmm. they're going to think that you're spamming these people instead of sending them great information from your church or school.
Yep.
And so once you get blacklisted, then you have the challenge of proving, you know, that you are legitimate and getting off that blacklist.
Yeah, but that what a can pain be, that is. Yeah.
Yeah. Lots of maintenance there. Lots of support mm-hmm. and time consuming. So
what are the options if you're looking for, like most congregations are, sending to a large audience?
Well, one thing I came up with was using a Google or Yahoo group. And what these are is basically kind of a public or maybe not
right?
even not so much, not so public, but yes, a community around a particular topic or organization or whatever. And you can set these up for free. And what they do is allow for communication within the group. Everyone that's a member of the group can get emails from the server as new topics are posted there. I've seen them used in more of a two-way kind of conversational thing. So we all have an interest in crocheting. Mm-hmm. So we can subscribe to a group, a Yahoo group or a Google group around the topic of crocheting, and maybe exchange our favorite patterns or talk about the newest yarn or whatever. And it's more conversational between all the members of the group. We have a good example of that with our listserv. It kind of functions in that same way, where we can all talk about things related to technology topics. But the Google and Yahoo groups also allow you to have web pages on the group website and have files stored there.
Yeah, document sharing, right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But as I investigated, what I found was they can be limited. Like, you can turn off the file sharing, you can turn off the web pages, you can limit the ability of who can send email to the group, so that it becomes more of this one-way communication tool, so that you can push out information to the members of the group, and they don't have the ability to email the entire group themselves. Only you as the owner of the group can do that. Mm-hmm. And so that really begins to function in the way that I'm looking for as a solution for this kind of mass email. You have the ability to subscribe and unsubscribe people as the owner of the group.
You can upload a list, or do they all need accounts?
No, actually, they don't all need accounts, and I thought maybe they did. But you can upload a list, and it'll send an email to them asking them to confirm. And they simply have to click a link in the email, and then they're subscribed to your group. Mm-hmm. And the other thing you can do is you can make it completely private, so that it's not searchable, and people can't find it if they're looking on the web. You know, I would think this would be more internal-type communication, not really something you'd necessarily want to be real public, and not something you'd want necessarily people to come along and subscribe to themselves,
right.
But more just your member-only communication. So you can make it by invitation only, where you control sending out the invitations to be part of the group. So mm-hmm. I think, you know, these are very viable solutions, and the price is right. They're both free options.
Yeah,
so,
those are great options, I think. Yeah. I wasn't aware that you could auto-subscribe or at least push people in there and then allow them to accept. That sounds like a great idea. Another one that I thought of, we have a partnership with Concordia Technology Solutions, mostly for the Shepherd Staff database that we've talked about, the church management software solution. But they also have an adjunct solution, a kind of a Web 2.0 application called Member Connect, which is an online intranet solution for internal communications. And that also has those kinds of communications tools. And you can narrow it or widen it depending on what the group is that you're trying to communicate. There's an announcements section that people can auto-subscribe to and get alerts when new announcements are posted, or you can send email from it. Members can also update their member information, look at a membership directory, those kinds of things. There is a fee to that, so that's not going to be free, but it does integrate nicely with Shepherd Staff so that, you know, member updates flow back and forth to that. So that's something that you may want to consider. That's CTSMemberConnect.com from our good friends at Concordia Technology Solutions. So those are kind of the group-based ones. What if somebody really just wants to send mass amounts of email without fear of kind of getting blacklisted or blocked or have other kind of technology issues? Are there tools out there that'll do that, Sally?
Sure. There's a couple of fee-based tools that I found that just exist for sending email communication. One of them I was turned on to because Camp Philip uses it. It's one mm-hmm. of our Wells camps here in Wisconsin, and it's called ConstantContact.com, and they have a free trial, but it's $15 per month for email list up to 500, mm-hmm. and I believe they have some nonprofit discounts as well, so make sure you check that out as well. Basically, they have some really professional templates, so you can make your email look really slick with all your topics, including images and things like that. You can manage multiple groups. You mentioned earlier, you know, your choir versus your school families versus your church communication, and you can do all of that on ConstantContact.com. And looks like it's pretty simple to work with. The people that are subscribed can easily click a link and unsubscribe if they don't want to receive it anymore. Mm-hmm. And Just a very slick tool. And another one to throw in there is eyecontact.com, and their price looks like it's $10 a month. So just a couple of email services out there on the web.
Yep.
If I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to – that brought another one to mind, which is kind of more for the technology savvy. If you have your own server, you can install an application that's been around a long, long time called Mailman. That's one that we use here in the Senate office to push out emails. The call list, for instance, if anybody receives a call list, that's sent out through Mailman. You have to have your own server and be fairly technically savvy. It's a little kludgy to work with as far as the administrator is concerned, but you know it allows all of the features that you talked about, and it is free. But again, you have to kind of dig into some code and make sure that you've got everything set up and maintainable. But once it's set up, it's as easy as sending an email to an email address, and it just gets pushed out, kind of like a listserv.
Right, and the ultimate techie solution, according to my husband at least, after we talked about email solutions with your regular email client, he said, well, then I would just install an email server on a Linux machine mm-hmm. and run it myself. And I said, yeah, right. But, if you're a techie at heart, maybe that's an option too, because certainly Linux software is free and there's email servers software out there. So
yeah,
lots of different
Mailman,
options.
Mailman, I believe, will run on Linux too, so. Mm-hmm. So if you, what we'd be interested in hearing, and I know a lot of schools and churches are struggling with this same issue, maybe you have found a solution that we haven't even mentioned here. We would love for you to tell us about that so that we can share that with our other listeners. So contact us through our regular methods. The best one is to go to wellstech.wells.net and leave a comment there, or you can send us an email at wellstech@wells.net. So lots of things that we can do with email. Hopefully that this conversation has given you some ideas and certainly maybe an encouragement to use the tools that are out there, because it's certainly doable for congregations and schools to be able to communicate with their members via email. Up next is our interview of the week, and we had a chance to speak with Ted Klug, who is the technology director at Lakeside Lutheran High School. A while back, we had a conversation with, was it Peter Schmidt, about social networks and how he's using those for interacting with his youth group. Ted is doing some similar things and then trying to educate people on some of the good and the bad things that are involved with social networks and some of the things that parents and students need to be concerned with. He recently appeared at a leadership conference that was held in Waukesha, did a presentation there. We thought it would be a great opportunity for us to sit down with him and talk a little bit more about social networks. Here's our conversation with Ted. Joining us today is Ted Klug, who currently serves as the technology director and chairman of the computer science department at Lakeside Lutheran High School in Lake Mills, Wisconsin. Welcome to the show, Ted. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Martin, Sally. I appreciate the opportunity.
We saw that you were doing a workshop last week at the leadership conference in Waukesha. And wanted to take some time to sit down with you and talk a little bit about what you presented there, especially as it relates to social networks and the use of them by students in particular and youth that I think our parents, that listen and teachers that are involved with the education of these students, would do well to learn some of these things. And it's a very rapidly changing landscape and one that we really need to get stay on top of. And so before we do that, maybe you can tell our listeners, Ted, what your responsibilities are at Lakeside.
Sure. I guess my best description of my responsibilities is I'm the in-house tech geek.
Okay.
You already said I'm the computer science department chairman. I also do a lot of teaching in that area.
Mm-hmm.
I teach web page design. I teach programming. And I even do a little bit of drafting in there as well. But I also I also get the opportunity to be able to teach the teachers, encourage the use of technology in their classrooms on a day-to-day basis, and I get the fun opportunity of troubleshooting as well. And so so that is basically my responsibility to babysit 200 computers and to educate not only the students but the teachers as well.
Sounds like a lot of fun. I noticed that in your leadership conference presentation, you included two aspects of this online social networking and chatting, both educating and protecting our students online. I thought that was really interesting as you kind of tackled the topic, that you didn't just talk about protecting them from it, but also that educational component. I'm assuming that each one of those is important in the process. Can you tell us a little bit about the differences between the two, maybe?
Well, I really believe they go hand in hand. I don't think one can go without the other. As leaders in our churches and our schools, it's important that that we are protecting our students and also our teachers. We can't forget about that, from the negative uses of the internet. Because how many times have you not turned on the TV and seen these things go too far? The story about a parent going after their neighbor and leading to suicide. So we need to be protecting not only our kids, our teachers, and our parents from this, but the avenue we do that through is through education. And it's the educating not only of our students, but our teachers and our parents as well, to that idea of how much information is too much information. There's some idea out there that social networking is horrible, and we need to get the kids and the parents to understand that that's not horrible. But there can be horrible uses of it.
What got you kind of started along, thinking along these lines, that there needs to be some materials created, some training provided, some workshops done in this particular area? Was there just a general observation that this was being underserved? Was there an incident or two going on at your school? Was it your own kids that you noticed that there's dangerous stuff out there? How did you kind of latch on to this particular topic?
Well, to be honest, it was a reactive involvement. About 3 years back, we had some students who had some concerns, some good Christian concern about their other their classmates on their MySpace accounts, and so we as a school decided to investigate the problem and saw it. And we, as we were doing that, we saw that our students were giving way too much information. We had a student who gave her address and then listed off the time she went to bed. And so there were other students giving incriminating information. And so I, together with a few of our other staff, worked with our ISP, our internet service provider, our local police department, and our staff as a whole. And we put together a full school presentation on the problem to all the students and gave them ways to show the light of the gospel as they were doing this or using this social media. And then we also had a parents' presentation as well that same night, taking the parents through it, because a lot of the parents are outside of that bubble, and we wanted to make sure they understood exactly what was going on. So since then, I've been discussing this all the way through our synod, grade schools. I was invited to a teachers' conference as well in California, and then the reason you guys brought me on was the school leadership conference as well, to try to give not only information but proactive solutions
to the
topic.
Yeah, I was noticing. You were kind enough to forward your presentation that you presented there at the leadership conference, and going through some of that material is really eye-opening. Some of the examples that you showed a series of screens where you could pick off of their MySpace page or their Facebook page just a ton of very personal information that you could build a pretty in-depth profile of an individual teen if you just spent a little bit of time on their page.
Yeah, well, you guys actually had Pastor Peter Schmidt on a few weeks back, and he had talked about the idea of really locking down a student's Facebook account, and this was just an example that I used where if the students don't lock it down, how you can walk through the students' friends to get to other people. And so I tried to take the people that were at the conference through that idea. We walked through a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend. So we went four deep, and we met this girl who no one in the room had met, in including me, and we walked through all the information that she gave, and then how someone can use that information to really gain anything about someone, from the birth date that was given to the names of younger siblings, to the schools in which they go to. And so, it, like you said, it can be really eye-opening to someone who's never seen that before. And so we took them even further, and I showed them, okay, well, she mentioned where she worked. Well, here's where her work is, right. And here is where she lives, because we have so many neat Web 2.0 things that are out there now, one of which is Google Maps, where you actually now have the ability to get down on the street level and turn and take a look at someone's house. Mm-hmm. And so there are many positives to that, but I try to show them that can be a negative as well.
Makes our youth very, very vulnerable. You can just, you know, see how somebody who's got malicious intent could easily take that information and really take advantage of somebody of that age who's impressionable, and, you know, just some bad things could happen.
And I can definitely see the appeal to the youth. The kids are all over this technology and using it with abandon, obviously, you know, with your examples that you've given. I introduced just an internal discussion forum to my students here at St. John's and Sleepy Eye last year, and they were logging onto it away from school and just very, very interested in the technology and really eager to use it and clicking all the different buttons and figuring out all the nuances of the system and everything. So they're digital natives, as we've mentioned before, and they're very comfortable with these settings and eager to try out all the possibilities.
And sometimes not willing to understand the ramifications of them as well.
Exactly.
So are there appropriate uses for social networks, whether that be in the educational context or certainly in the confines of a person's personal life, in your opinion?
I do believe there can be. There are many different uses that you could use in your schools. In your personal life, you guys have done a fabulous job talking about that. I referred to Pastor Peter Schmidt a few minutes ago, and he showed how that can be just a huge blessing of a social network to ministry as a whole, to keeping up with family. I just saw a news story that said the idea of a class reunion is going to be out the door soon, because so many of these digital natives are actually having a day-to-day class reunion with their classmates from grade school and high school, right on Facebook or on MySpace. Mm-hmm. So there are a ton of positives to it, but as we pointed out, there are some drawbacks as well.
So I assume you're doing this education for the students, so you're educating them. What about on the parents' side? What kind of reaction are you getting from them?
Well, with anything that you come in that the parents don't know, sometimes it's welcomed with open arms, and sometimes you have those that are a little bit skeptical about you talking about this. The idea that it's not a school problem has been brought up in many different times, but I try to remind them that it is a school problem. There's many reasons why. For instance, somebody that is very well versed in this, and a website I'll give you later, wiredsafety.org. Perry Aftab has been on numerous TV shows and interviews, and she continues to remind us that the groups of kids are most at risk of these problems happening range from 11 and a half years old to 15.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's 30% boys, 70% girls. And I remember that because she repeated it about 7 times in this 5-minute interview that she had. And that can be, those are the ages that most of us in the Lutheran elementary school and high school are dealing with. And so it's what I try to remind the parents is that we are here, we have been called to assist you in training your whole child. So my concern is not only to educate the children in the light of God's word, but I'm also responsible to you as parents to set out information about this usage of technology. And the way that I've explained it to parents and getting them to understand is it's a lot like equating the internet to your run-of-the-mill home swimming pool. Swimming in a pool can be fun and safe for the family. It can be something that they can enjoy with their families and friends. And you can sit around the pool and develop wonderful relationships and grow those relationships for a long time. But conversely, with little children around the house, it's not too wise just to leave the pool unlocked and unsupervised. So you're exposing your kids to all kinds of different dangers.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a pool, isn't one of your most immediate concerns teaching your kids how to properly act around the pool and how to swim in the pool? And then would parents want their child's peers or strangers in the pool teaching them appropriate usage of the pool?
Right.
Or would the parents want to do this?
Right.
So
great analogy.
And it can just be a scary thing, and nothing could be worse as a parent than watching your child drown and knowing that you could have saved them. And that's really our job, to teach the parents how to doggy paddle in this in this information age.
So are there red flags that you share with the parents, things that they could look for if maybe the child is at a point of drowning in this social media world?
Well, one of the ones that I've seen in my teaching ministry is the red flag of when a child just shows up and they're just dead tired at school. And I try to remind the parents of that as well. If your kids are sleeping in until 10 and 11, that might be a yellow flag to you to keep an eye on, because not only social networks, but now we're looking at this whole social media thing now sliding into things like video games. Kids can now be playing Xbox 360 and their Nintendo Wii online with their friends and people who they don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that I try to remind the parents of is to keep a close eye if your kids are just plain tired. And that rolls over as an educator, too, to know that if my kids are in my school are showing up dead tired, that their quality of the classroom experience is going to be minimal at best. But you had mentioned red flags. The ones that I have seen that the FBI puts out, the FBI has a great website that gives a lot of information on this. But their big ones that they've thrown out for social addiction are that if your child spends large amounts of time online, especially at night, that should be your first red flag. The second one would be, so your child's online, but they're turning off the computer monitor or quickly changing screens and toggling screens when a parent walks into the room. Or third, a big one would be if you're finding pornography on your child's computer.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the big red flags that they throw up, that something's going on, that there's something you need to talk to your child about.
Well, I suppose there's even an innocent trap that kids fall into, not even understanding the danger, of what they're doing, just the sharing of personal information. So it's not even addictive behavior. It's just they don't know any better.
Exactly. Well, don't we teach in our schools that these kids are supposed to take the light of the gospel and go forward? And so we're educating them to be social people.
Right.
God calls us to be social people. But yet, as you said, too often they don't understand that there are people on the other end that aren't doing this to be social. They're looking for something else.
So you mentioned the FBI resource. Are there other online resources that both children and parents and maybe even educators can review if they want to. And I'm thinking educators in particular who want to maybe do what you're doing as far as, you know, raising awareness and helping students as well as parents understand, you know, what these things are and how to use them appropriately.
Sure. I've done a lot of stuff on the internet, and I found number one, there's a lot of stuff there with this topic, and there's a lot of concern. Some of the good ones that I've ran into, as I mentioned before, wiredsafety.org, they actually on their website have a specific Q&A for the people we just talked about, teachers, for parents, and for students, and it's just a nice site that you can go down and you can say, I've got this question, boom, they've got the answer. In fact, they've even got a board that you can go back and forth with them on to get the answers that you're looking for. Another one was actually presented to the Wells Tech Conference a number of years ago by Dr. David Walsh. He's right. The president of MediaWise, and that's mediafamily.org. Mm-hmm. And they've got a lot of great tools. The one that I like especially from them is that it's great for parents and teachers who really don't have a background, who aren't those techie kind of people, that they take and simplify step by step how to set up a MySpace account, how to understand social networking. And so I think that's a great website as well. Other ones that I've seen, OnGuardOnline.gov. OnGuardOnline.gov is a site that's put out by the government, and just a good amount of information and very easy to understand as well. So there are so many more. I could list off another 50 for you, but I'm guessing that you're we don't have enough time, and there's the website's not long enough for us to add all that in there.
Well, it's absolutely certainly a growing concern, and just the wealth of information that's out there is a testament to that. But I think for people wanting to just get going, you know, some of these basic websites, especially the government-sponsored ones, are typically well done. They put a lot of time and energy, and they also recognize that this is a growing issue within our country that we really need to raise awareness on and protect ourselves against, and not throw the baby out in the bathwater either. There are great uses for social networks, and I think one of those is obviously sharing our faith and being able to live your faith, whether it be in a digital world or in the world in which we walk and talk here too. So lots of opportunities there. Thank you, Ted, so much for the time that you spent with us today. I think this is a great topic and probably worthy of some future conversations.
Appreciate the opportunity and appreciate all you guys do on the podcast.
Oh, our pleasure. Well, again, we want to thank Ted, and we're always looking for people to share with the class, as it were, information about their experiences. Ted definitely has some firsthand experience with social networks.
Right, and he was wonderful to send us actually a PDF version mm-hmm. of the presentation he did at the leadership conference. So we'll be posting a link to that in our show notes at wellstech.wells.net.
Great. Up next, our picks of the week. Sally, what's your pick this week?
Well, we were talking a little bit about email. I thought I'd point you to what I use as an email client software. Moving away from the Microsoft products a little, I've kind of standardized on Thunderbird, which is a Mozilla product. Mozilla is the same company that produces the Firefox browser, obviously a free product available for download from the internet, and I'll make sure and include a link in the show notes. Thunderbird is a powerful email client, allows you to set up multiple emails as well as RSS feeds and that kind of thing. So all of the capabilities you would have in an Outlook-type product or Outlook Express, you'll find in Thunderbird. In addition, they have a plugin for Thunderbird that I found particularly helpful. It's called Lightning, and Lightning adds calendaring
Thunder
and tasking.
Thunder and lightning, huh?
Yeah, that's right. Gives you your calendar and task list to incorporate into the Thunderbird email client. So with Lightning, really, I'm getting all the capabilities of Microsoft Outlook, you know, the high-end Microsoft email client product with the whole calendaring and task list. You can have multiple calendars and even make some linkages to your Google Calendar. So if you're using Google Calendaring, you can have shared calendaring coming into your Lightning calendar. And just a very, very powerful tool, and I'm real excited about it and encourage you to check it out.
Yeah, I tried it a long time ago, and I'm sure improvements have been made. The folks at Mozilla make some really great products. Firefox 3 was just released, and you know, they make some significant improvements with that open source, you know, user community kind of style of approach. Just some superior products. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to stay with the email theme of the week here, and also in maybe tribute to Bill Gates and Microsoft. My pick of the week is for Outlook only, and not even Outlook Express. You have to be an Outlook user, so kind of narrowly focused, and it has to be on the PC as well. So sorry, all of you with Macs out there. My pick is called Zobni, Zobni. It's at Zobni.com, and it's
is
a little
Z?
I'm
Z
sorry,
X.
I'm sorry. It's pronounced Zobni, but spelled with an X.
Okay.
Xobni.com. It is an Outlook add-in or plug-in that essentially brings kind of the social networking nature of email to Outlook. It installs rather easily, and essentially what it is it kind of inspects your entire system, all of your emails, and makes sense of them and kind of connects them together. So, for instance, as you get an email from somebody, it will display that person's name. It'll look through your system and see all the other emails and all the other conversations that you've had with a particular person. It'll track when those emails were sent, so you can kind of get a little bit of a profile if they're a morning person or an afternoon person, when those emails come in with a little bit of a graph. How many emails you've sent to them, how many you've received from them. It'll rank them against all your other contacts. So, you know, if you can converse with somebody on a very regular basis, they may have a higher ranking than somebody that you only converse with on a semi-regular basis. It'll pull their phone number from email addresses. It will pull their associates that you have maybe in common. So, you know, it'll give you kind of a network view of people that they know that you can click on, and you can bring up their information. Two of the neatest things that I use, you know, and I have an infamously bad memory about email conversations or other conversations. This thing is a lifesaver, because what it does is it groups conversations that you've had with a particular person. So you can go back over time and see all of the conversations that you've had, and it pulls this from your sent mail and from your inbox, and actually does the file attachments as well. So you can go back over time and review every kind of email conversation that you've had. You pull it up and you see the entire thread and all the appropriate files that you've exchanged over time as well. So an excellent tool. It allows you to do a very fast search of the information. I use it all the time at this point. And the best part about it, it's free.
The price is right.
The price is right. So that's Zobni.com.
You know, Martin, I'm stunned as you're describing all of those things, but what strikes me is that, you know, we've become more and more immersed in this digital world, mm-hmm. and what we're seeing is more tools like that can aggregate all the data that we're dealing with and make it a lot more meaningful than just the individual emails that come into your inbox, but all of this connectivity and aggregation is just so exciting to see.
Yeah, we just get swamped with the amount of data, amount of email, amount of files, and amount of different tools that we need to bring all this together to make sense. And these kind of tools make sense of it all. You know, they kind of present it to you in an easy to understand and useful format, as opposed to you having to figure out or remember where you put something, those kinds of things. So these tools are really great.
Kind of relieves your brain of a little bit of responsibility and
yeah, my
lets
brain
it
needs
work
a
on
lot
other
of relieving. So, you know, this tool was really made for me. So give it a try. Wells.net feature of the week, Sally. What do we have?
Sure. Wanted to mention today our daily devotion service. You can find it at wells.net/jump/daily devotion. You can also find it featured in the banner of the homepage of wells.net. It's updated each weekday by our friends at whataboutjesus.com, and it's a wonderful, short, easy to read daily devotion. Usually ends with a prayer at the end, and you can get it. You can subscribe to it for email delivery, for RSS delivery, and also for podcast delivery. So we give it to you in a lot of different ways, so that you can get that daily dose of God's Word from our daily devotion service.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Sally. Great stuff. I listen to it every morning on the way into work. I just wanted to remind everybody about the Worship Music and the Arts Conference that's coming up the end of this month now, July 28th to 31st. I'll be out there. We're going to do some recording of some sessions out there so that we can put those up on streams. It's at Gustavus Adolphus College or University, I believe, in St. Peter, Minnesota. The registration deadline was June 15th, but that it's still not too late to register for the conference. You just don't get the early bird pricing. You pay a $25 late registration fee, which is a small price to pay if you really want to go. This is a great conference. You can find out more about it at wells.net/jump/worship-conf. That's C-O-N-F. There's all kinds of worship services. Recitals are free and open to the public. No registration needed for those. You just need to get out to St. Peter, Minnesota. So certainly take advantage of that. Find out a little bit more if you like. But if you are free July 28th to 31st, it would be time well spent, especially if you're a person responsible for any worship activities within your congregation.
I'm excited to hear more about the special choirs that are being formed for the worship conference. There's mm-hmm. going to be a high school honors choir. There's also going to be a mass handbell choir, and I think they're going to be playing In Christ Alone, so I'm really excited to hear that.
Oh, yeah. Are you going to get a chance to go over there, Sally?
Maybe for some of the worship. I'd like to at least be at some of the worship services.
Yeah, I hear it's just a wonderful experience, you know, all those voices together. Mm-hmm. Community feedback. Who's talking to us this week?
Well, we had a couple of things we wanted to mention here. One of them is that we heard from a Wells member, Cindy Krieger from Shepherd of the Hills in Lansing, Michigan. We've heard from Cindy before. She's actually works for the state of Michigan in their IT department doing some web work for them. So once I said, Cindy, what kind of great tips do you have to share with us, you know, for the mm-hmm. Wells Tech podcast? And she got back to us recently and was talking a little bit about the emphasis in her office, at least, on security. And those kind of things. And she sent us a great link to a government cybersecurity site. And I'll make sure and include a link to that in the show notes, where there's just tons of tips about being extra secure with your website and your online communications. Probably ties in well with our discussion of email communications as well. So we'll include Cindy's link in the show notes. And then there was one that you wanted to mention, right, Martin, about Wordle?
Yep, from Pastor Dan Witte down in Florida, gave us a link to Wordle.net. And it's kind of a cool application, although not essentially overly useful, but kind of fun to play with. Essentially, you can point it at different series of text items. And I haven't played with this a lot yet, but it's you throw a lot of words at it. You can throw, I think, websites at it or series of lists. And it essentially takes all those keywords and puts it into what I guess I would call a word map, right, Sally? You know, it's kind of an artistic way of, you know, highlighting different words or different things in kind of a memorable way, where you can look at it and you kind of at one glance see everything related to a particular topic or concept.
Right. Maybe another term for it would be a tag cloud.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. And just that extra emphasis on words that are emphasized more. Again, kind of going back to your pick of the week, that aggregation mm-hmm. Of your data, even to see, you know, what your website, what the main themes are that are coming out of your website or different places that you might tag data. It can be really impressive to look at and fun too.
Yeah, I think it bases it on the number of times a word appears, you know, in a particular mm-hmm. paragraph or a website, and it's kind of eerie almost how right on it can be when you take a look at it. So that's yeah. Wordle, I believe it's Wordle, Wordle.net. So thanks to Pastor Whitty for sharing that with us. Well, that should about do it this week, Sally. Thanks again for spending some time from beautiful Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. And we've talked about email. We've talked about social networks. That's really why this show exists, is to share those kinds of ideas with you and to get some ideas from you. So please feel free to communicate with us in all the different ways that we have available, the website, email. We do have a voicemail line as well, and that I got to look up that phone number. It is 414-375-2334. We've yet to have anybody leave us a voicemail that to contribute to the show, so why not be the first? 414-375-2334. Let's close the show as we always do, Sally, with a highlight of one of our Wells musicians. This is the group called Koine. They've appeared a number of times on the show from their album Koine 2. The song is Jesus, Priceless Treasure. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Defy thee, death, I now decry thee, fear I bid thee cease, world thou shalt not harm me, nor thy threats alarm me, while I sing of peace, God's great power guards every choice, hence all empty.